May it please the Court, Catherine Dick for Appellant Jose Medina Mendoza. Your Honors, in this case there were two errors that require a reversal and remand for resentencing. And the first error made by the District Court was to apply a two-level offense-level enhancement to my client based on the aggravating role factor. It was based on a mistake that the judge made in the record. The second was his failure to consider all of the 3553A factors. Now, turning to the offense-level enhancement, there is a central mistake here that the judge made, and that is this. He believed that my client, Mr. Mendoza, set the sale price of the cocaine in the transaction with the undercover agent. This is the fact that the judge goes back to again and again when he makes a finding of control and when he makes a finding that my client claimed right to a larger share of the fruits of the crime. But it is a mistake. In fact, what happened is that there was a discussion of two different prices between the special agent and co-defendant Perez, who was the only dealer who had any communication with the special agent. After the discussion of the two prices, Mr. Perez made a phone call, and after that phone call, they agreed on a set price. From this chain of events, the district court believed that my client was controlling the price. What had really occurred was that there were two prices because there were two products, two suppliers, and my client was one of the two suppliers. And as this court has repeatedly held, a fronting relationship, a pure supplier relationship, is not enough for this enhancement. It's as if this had happened. Special Agent Lukens walks into a Best Buy. He sees a $10,500 Sony flat screen TV. Now, what the district judge believed happened is that he walked up to Mr. Perez, a Best Buy employee, and said, "Can I get that $10,500 TV for maybe $9? Could you do that for me?" And Mr. Perez said, "I have to go talk to my manager, but let me get back to you." That's what the district judge believed happened. What actually happened was that Special Agent Lukens walked in. He saw a $10,500 Sony and a $9,000 Panasonic. And he said, "You know, I understand. They're different TVs, different quality, different price. I just want one to take home today. Which one can I get today, Mr. Perez?" Mr. Perez said, "Let me call Sony. Let me call Panasonic." Sony came through for him. And in the words of Mr. Perez, in his conversation with Agent Lukens, in Exhibit 6B, he says, regarding the $9,000 cocaine, the other guy, he's not ready. He's referring to a second supplier of cocaine. The district judge made this mistake, and from this, he drew all of the other inferences on which he based the factors of control, direction, and claiming a larger share of fruits of the crime. Again and again, he went back to the idea that my client set the price of this transaction, that he was, in effect, that Best Buy manager giving directions to Mr. Perez, who was going out and then doing these transactions at his behest. In fact, what the record shows and what it supports is that Mr. Perez and Agent Lukens were repeatedly setting up dates and times to make deals. They were setting the price. They were discussing whether to meet in a parking lot or a house. They were discussing whether or not Mr. Perez would give him a little bit of a discount on the 4 ounces or if he could do a discount on the next half kilo. The person who was directing and controlling his own transaction was Mr. Perez. Now, turning to the second factor that the judge found, again, he found that my client claimed right to a larger share of the fruits of the crime. And once again, the judge cites back in the record directly to the idea that because my client, he believed mistakenly, had set the price, that when he was coming back to pay back my client, because this was a fronting situation and it was on credit, that my client was then going to take the fruits of that proceed and distribute it, that he was in fact claiming share to a larger part of the fruits of the crime. But that's simply not demonstrated by the record. What is demonstrated by Perez's plea agreement, by his testimony, is that he had a set price he had agreed to pay to his supplier, Mr. Mendoza, and he had a set price that he was charging for resale. And when he took that cocaine on credit, it became his, and he resold it, or would have resold it, to the special agent, but for the fact that he was arrested on that date.
Which one did he actually buy?
He bought...
But the cheap brand?
He bought the more expensive stuff.
Well, now that was supposed to be $10,500, wasn't it?
Sorry?
I'm confused. You were comparing the TV sets, but which is the more expensive one? The $9,000 was the, I guess we'll call it the generic brand.
Here's where it gets a little bit confusing. the two TVs that you're selling to your customer here,
yeah,
the more expensive 10,500 one, he was paying 9,000 in Mendoza, which is the same he would have charged for the lesser brand. So we've got a double 9,000 here, which is he's taking a $1,500 profit for the more expensive brand. We don't know what profit he would have taken had he sold to Special Agent Lukens the 9,000. Maybe he was going to buy from this other guy for 8 and resell for 9. But there's two 9,000s in the transaction, which is the price that my client, that the evidence shows my client set to Mr. Perez, and then he resold for 10,500, and the fact that he offered to Special Agent Lukens either the 10,500 or the 9,000. The main point being,
we don't know if Mendoza paid for either one of them, do we?
We know that Mr. Perez did not pay. He was on a fronting relationship. We don't know
who. He was a retailer. He just paid Mendoza. But we don't know what Mendoza's profit on his transaction with whoever he got the stuff from.
That is exactly correct. We have no idea what his profit was. We don't know if he was in a fronting relationship. And, in fact, as this court held United States v. Pagan, the 3B1.1 enhancement wasn't appropriate where a defendant didn't take proceeds beyond his own profits. And there's no evidence here that my client reached into someone else's profits. Sure, he must have taken some profit, and as you said, Judge, we have no idea what it is. But the
well,
other
it could have been anything that he wanted it to be, I guess.
I guess it would have been whatever the last guy wanted to charge him, and we don't know whether that was a dollar or $8,999. But at the end of the day, the government suggests and that the mere fact that he had more money to come to him versus the profits that the next guy was going to make somehow demonstrates that he was taking a larger share of the proceeds. And that simply can't be the case, because this is about taking a larger share. It's about a proportionate amount. It's about reaching.
Also, didn't Mendoza also recruit somebody named Rodriguez to store cocaine?
That was Mr. Rodriguez's statement. That was Mr. Rodriguez's statement before he fled and became a fugitive. Mr. Rodriguez never testified at trial. He never testified at sentencing. He never even appeared before the sentencing judge. And we would submit he broke all of his promises to the court, to the government, to the probation office by breaking his bond, and that his own story is unreliable, given that he said, all I did was store for $100 or $100 a day. It differs where you look. Cocaine that was apparently worth well over $40,000 for resale, and then we find out from Mr. Perez that he's helping to cut it, that he's waiting for Mr. Mendoza to come back, or that he's waiting for Mr. Perez to come back and pay Mr. Mendoza. None of this adds up, and we don't have Rodriguez ever tested on these facts. So that's the last factor that the judge found, and really if you look to how often the judge went back to this idea of controlling the price and how important that was, you see that fundamental mistake that he made in believing that my client was this manager repeatedly telling Mr. Perez how to go about his transactions, when in fact there's no evidence that my client ever told him where to go or how to do it or what to buy, and that in fact Mr. Perez's own statement to the probation office was that 3 days before the half-kilogram transaction that led to all of these arrests is when he first ran into Mr. Mendoza at a gas station and asked him whether he had the stuff. It's just that this is a supplier relationship. Mr. Perez had multiple suppliers. Mr. Mendoza was one of them. And the pure supplier relationship is not enough for the 3B1.1 enhancement.
Of course, Mendoza brought this stuff in from Mexico himself, didn't he?
Well, we don't know that. We I believe there may be a hearsay statement on the record that he told somebody that he did that. But beyond that, what we do know is that
he sort of started the whole transaction in motion, didn't he?
I guess you could say that about anybody who's
from Mexico. There wouldn't have been any transaction.
That's true, but there's no but-for standard that I've ever seen in the case law. And I suppose in any organization, if you look for the first person to have the product, but for that guy, the next guy wouldn't have gotten it. And we could go up the ladder all the time that way, but I don't think that speaks to the relative responsibility. A supplier is always going to be the but-for guy when you start looking at who the dealers are buying from. But this court has held that suppliers, middleman alone, is not enough. And we submit that the record only supports that, and that there was a central mistake, an error, that the judge made because he did not understand what the conversations were between Special Agent Lukens and Mr. Perez.
We had a lot of questions for you, so I'll give you a minute for rebuttal. All right. I hope I get this right. Mr. Mayer? Maher?
What's the name?
M-A-H-E-R.
May it please the Court, my name is Brendan Maher, and I represent the United States in this case. As the briefs before the Court indicate, and as defense counsel has discussed with you this morning, one of the issues facing the Court is the district court's application of the role in the offense enhancement. And counsel focused principally on some inferences that the district court drew, and it's our position was entitled to draw from the record. But I guess we would address it in reverse. And Your Honor got to the point of the recruitment issue, which is frankly the government's strongest argument for the support of in support of the district court's application. At the outset, I just want to remind the court that the standard being applied here is clear error, and the factors that are used to apply the 3B1.1 enhancement are not exclusive. Of one another. In other words, the district court is entitled to look at the entire list with a view towards determining the role in the offense, and this court has said a number of different times the central concern is relative responsibility for the offense and that no single factor is dispositive. The defendant chooses to focus in principally on the issue of the price and the cocaine and whether or not Mendoza, the defendant, had any control over the other people in the conspiracy, but as Your Honor noted, it kind of starts the other way around. This is a small conspiracy, admittedly. There are three people involved. The defendant, Mendoza, a gentleman named Jose Rodriguez, and a gentleman named Samuel Perez. This is not a vast, wide-ranging conspiracy, and so the district court needed to focus on, as between these three individuals, in looking at all of the evidence that was available to the court at the time, is any one of them more responsible than the other two? And if so, which one is it? And the government asserted below, and the pre-sentence report concurred, that of the three individuals involved in the case, Jose Mendoza was the most responsible. It did that based on several different factors, not simply the control issue alone. First of all, regardless of whether Jose Rodriguez showed up for his sentencing or not, there are two data points in the record which support the fact that Mendoza, the defendant here, recruited him. First of all, in his interview with police after being arrested, and that interview or the comments that he made in the interview are reflected then in the PSR, which the district court in turn adopted as its findings of fact, Mr. Rodriguez, when arrested, said, "I agreed to store the cocaine in this case at my house in exchange for payment." So there's a statement pretty close in time to when he's arrested saying, "My role in this was to store it for the defendant, Mendoza, and he agreed to pay me to do it." And as the district court noted in the sentencing colloquy and made as a basis of finding that the aggravating role enhancement was applicable, but for Mendoza asking Rodriguez to store the cocaine in his house where his wife and children live, Rodriguez would not have been a part of this, wouldn't have had to be at a point of entering a guilty plea and admittedly fleeing the jurisdiction before sentencing. The second part of that is that Rodriguez did come before the court and at least before being sentenced accepted responsibility in the form of a plea agreement. And that plea agreement was adopted under oath in open court. And so in terms of the data points for the issue of recruitment, which is a specific point that the district court was entitled to rely on in the 3B1.1 enhancement, it was clearly entitled to find that the defendant here recruited Rodriguez into the conspiracy and that Rodriguez would have had no role in the offense but for Mendoza asking him to store his cocaine for him. So there's the recruitment aspect that really isn't challenged in any way other than saying, well, it's unreliable and the district court shouldn't have relied on that, shouldn't have accepted the under oath admission of Rodriguez in his plea and shouldn't have referred on the sections of the PSR in which recruitment was discussed. The second issue that the court, I think, honed in on during counsel's argument is this was Mendoza's cocaine. But for Mendoza either owning the cocaine, and counsel's right, the record is not clear as to whether or not he actually brought it with him when he returned from Mexico to Rockford in 2006, but several witnesses, Sam Perez, Sarah Hernandez, and Mrs. Rodriguez, all provided evidence at trial or provided testimony from which the inference can, not the inference, the direct fact is in the record that Mendoza actually owned the cocaine that was sold to Agent ultimately sold to Agent Lukens. So in terms of relative responsibility for the offense, Mendoza owned the cocaine. He found a place for it to be stored safely.
Well, saying he owned the cocaine is just another way of saying he was a supplier, though.
True, but
he may not prove that he was the big man of the deal.
Well, again, going back to the gist behind 3B1.1 and the application notes specifically take into account the possibility that there will be small conspiracies. He's not, I guess, as to this conspiracy, it's our position that he is the kingpin. I mean, as between these three actors, he's the one that brought the cocaine or at a minimum owned and arranged for its storage. And the conspiracy, of which two people pleaded guilty and Mr. Mendoza was convicted, wouldn't have existed but for him. On the issue of ownership of the cocaine, counsel points out in their brief, and I believe at argument here, that that's not a factor. Well, again, the court's decisions have consistently said that the central concern of 3B1.1 is relative responsibility for the offense. No single factor is dispositive. And the list in Application Note 4 includes the nature of participation in the commission of the offense. That doesn't say the word ownership in it, but the nature of the participation in the offense is one of the factors the district court can consider. And here, the fact that he owned the cocaine is a factor in his participation in the offense. Finally, to get to counsel's position or counsel's argument on the greater share of the proceeds argument, I'm not familiar with the economics of Best Buy. I'm not sure how that analogy applies here. Our view of it, as expressed in the brief, is really very simple. What we know from what's in the record is that Sam Perez agreed to sell Agent Lukens a half kilogram of cocaine for $10,500. We know that. We also know that Sam Perez agreed to pay Mendoza, the defendant here, $9,000 for that half kilogram of cocaine. So we know what the pot of money is. We know what Sam Perez got. Sam Perez got $1,500. We know what the defendant got. The defendant got, or would have gotten, had everybody not been arrested, $9,000. Our position on this is much simpler than supply chains. It's simply that $9,000 is greater than $1,500. Sam, or the defendant here, stood to get $9,000, four times what Perez was going to get in marking it up for resale. I think the court already noted correctly. We don't.
The wholesale price is higher than the retail price.
Absolutely, that's, but we
maybe
don't
that's
know.
What and Best Buy, the analogy is all about. But, I mean, that's pretty universally true, isn't it? I mean,
absolutely, but it points to his greater role in the offense. It points to the nature of his participation in the offense, and the 3B1.1 enhancement is designed to get to that issue. Here, again, Mendoza was, one way or the other, Mendoza, the defendant, was going to make more money than Sam Perez was. One of the factors that the district court relied on was the 3B1.1 factor, as elucidated in Note 4, greater share of the proceeds of the offense. And we know that's true. We know that he was going to, if they hadn't all been arrested, we know that he was going to get $9,000. So the two factors that the district court was absolutely entitled to rely on, and is certainly sufficient for this court to affirm on a clear error standard, are that Rodriguez was recruited into the conspiracy. That's an explicit finding made by the district court, and our position is it's adequately supported by the record in the form of the plea agreement and in the form of Rodriguez's post-arrest statements indicating that he had agreed for money, for consideration to store the cocaine for Mendoza. And then second of all, that the defendant clearly was going to get more money out of the pot of money that we know existed, the $10,500 pot of money. He was going to get more of that money. And again, for purposes of this appeal, I don't think it's disputed that it was Mendoza's cocaine. It was his product that he stored at Rodriguez's house. Again, this is a case in which we're not talking about a large conspiracy. The enhancement that was applied was the two-point enhancement under 3B1.1C. This is a small group of people, and the district court's central concern in allocating responsibility among that strong group of people took into account a number of different things, and it did not clearly err when it decided to apply the 3B1.1C enhancement to this defendant. Unless the court has any additional questions, we would simply ask that the sentence be affirmed.
All right, thank you, Ms. Dick.
Thank you, Your Honor. First thing I'd like to point out is that under 3B1.1, no single factor is dispositive. The reason that we keep coming back, or I keep coming back, to the control factor and to the price control factor is because that's what the district court kept coming back to. That is what it relied on, and that's what infected the entire sentencing. Even under 3553A, it was clear that the court was very focused on what my client's role in the offense was and what he had to do, and that he was convinced that my client was this manager controlling what was going on, that he was the Best Buy manager, not the independent operator out there with the Sonys. Now, going to the idea that there's a larger share of the fruits of the crime simply because $9,000 is more than $1,500, we believe there's a factual error underlying the court's finding, which in and of itself requires a remand for resentencing. But what the government's put forth is so overbroad that it makes no sense. A larger share of the fruits of the crime, that means you're taking a proportionate amount. We have no idea what Mr. Mendoza made. We have no evidence that he knew what Perez was going to make. The idea here has to be that he was going to control somebody else's. You look to the cases like United States versus Carter. The controlling person takes the $500 and, quote, doles out $100 to his co-defendants. There is no evidence that Mr. Mendoza did that, and I see my time is up.
Thank you, and Ms. Dick, thank you on behalf of the court for accepting appointment in this case and to your firm, Latham & Watkins, for supporting you in doing that.